Pod Save America is brought to you by OneSkin. Can we talk about New Year's resolutions for a sec? January used to be about totally reinventing yourself. Now it's more like doing an honest audit of what's actually working and doubling down on that.
Are you in the middle of that honest audit? You got your green visor on, buddy?
I am. I am. For me, it means taking my skin health seriously, that I'm doing.
Yeah.
And this is just doubling down on that.
That's right.
You think about one person who takes their skin health seriously. Mm-hmm. Think about me.
That's right.
And that means using OneSkin. With OneSkin, you know, you're supporting your long-term skin health at the cellular level. At their core is their patented OS1 peptide. They're the first ingredient proven to target senescent cells, the root cause of wrinkles, crepiness, and loss of elasticity, all key signs of skin aging. Know what that is. And these results have been validated in 5 different clinical studies. Certified safe for sensitive skin, OneSkin products are free from over 1,500 harsh or irritating ingredients. Dermatologists tested have been awarded the National Eczema Association Seal of Acceptance.
They got an itchy. They won the itchy. The coveted itchy.
By the NEA, delivering powerful results without irritation. Customers consistently rave about how their skin is smoother, firmer, and healthier looking, with results that get better over time, improving both the appearance and the overall health of their skin. No wonder OneSkin's products have over 10,000 five-star reviews. You know, I started using OneSkin, and better than just soap and water.
Yeah, beat soap and water.
That's me doubling down on my skin health.
Gotta have a nighttime skin routine.
Yeah, and now I know what all these words mean. Born from over 10 years of longevity research, OneSkin's OS1 peptide is proven to target the cells that cause the visible signs of aging, helping you unlock your healthiest skin now and as you age. And for a limited time, OneSkin is making it even easier to stay consistent with up to 30% off your first 3 subscription orders when you use code CROOKED at oneskin.co/crooked. That's up to 30% off with code CROOKED after you purchase. They'll ask where you heard about them. Please support our show and tell them we sent you. Welcome to Pod Save America. I'm Jon Favreau.
And I'm Alex Wagner. I love saying that when I'm here with you. It makes it even better.
It's so good. This is our first Sunday show of the year. You guys asked for more Pod Save America, and you got it. There's going to be a new episode in your feed every Sunday of 2026.
Oh, my God.
How exciting is that?
And this year's been 200 years long already. So there should be 200 extra episodes of Pod Save America.
We're all going to take turns hosting, including our newest host, but longtime pal, Alex Wagner. Here in studio.
How lucky am I? Listen, you got to kick the year off right. When the world is melting, you go to a hot place. You go to California, and I'm so thrilled to be here.
Come more often.
The snack selection's gotten a lot better since I was last here, I got to say. I don't know whether that's related to my contract or what.
We tried to ask for some healthier snacks.
Well, I don't know that I'd say that that's what happened. There's just more of them.
Well, we didn't want to take away the unhealthy snacks.
Well,
we just
right.
wanted a little bit more of a balance.
Yeah, I noticed
choice
more
for everyone.
Candy. But anyway, I guess we're all blind to, I'm blind to the healthy snacks. There just seemed a bounty, and I was grateful.
I'm biased, of course, but I'm a huge fan of your new show, Runaway Country, the newest addition to the Crooked Network.
Oh, it is such
How's it been going?
Well, it's great because you're on it this week. That's why you might be biased.
That's why it was so good this week.
That's why it was
particularly
such a
excellent episode, if
well,
I do say so myself.
Yeah, I got to say, flu-ridden Ben Rhodes is the best Ben Rhodes.
Yeah.
Hot on the mic this week. Yeah. Everyone was hot. I mean, we came back to a motherfucker of a year, really. I mean, what a series of events to bear witness to. And Runaway Country this week focused on Venezuela. We talked to some Venezuelans about their opinions of all of this, which is interesting and not exactly what you think. And then we got hot, spicy hot takes from Jon Favreau and Ben Rhodes.
It's always great being a guest on a show like that because I'm more measured as a host.
You let it rip.
As a moderating.
Yeah, you let it rip.
And that, I didn't have any, you know.
You saw that train with no brakes.
Did not give.
You throttled it up.
No fucks. As you mentioned, you know, the first week of 2026 has felt like several lifetimes.
Yeah.
None of which I would enjoy living again. but somehow we have a huge year ahead of us.
Yeah.
It's America's 250th birthday.
That's what I've been thinking. That's what I thought. New Year's Day, man. I thought, America, you look great for 250.
The country is being run. by an aging autocrat who is engaged in mind-boggling corruption and hemispheric domination. He's got an army of masked agents on the streets. One just killed an unarmed American citizen. But in November, this November,
yep,
he will face, for one of the very last times in his life,
an electorate. So. Make it so.
An electorate that has never been this angry with him,
yep,
over how he's handling the economy. And their votes will decide just how much of a lame duck Trump is and what the race will look like to finally replace him.
Mm.
So, chill year ahead.
Chill. What could go wrong?
And as everyone knows here at Pod Save America, we're still not in the prediction business. Though it seems that's like literally become quite a business now, the prediction business.
I mean, that's, people want any kind of map to
now
these uncertain times.
Now we're just betting. Now we're making bets.
Yeah, well, polymarket.
But I thought what could be useful is, we're not going to do predictions, but we could talk about the biggest political questions on our minds for the year ahead. What we think will be the most consequential, what we'll be paying closest attention to, what we think will tell us the most about where we're headed, that mm-hmm. kind of thing. So we're each going to do 6 questions for 2026.
Maybe 6.5.
Unless we have more.
Right.
And aren't too tied for the 6-26 bit.
Oh, good.
Then it's just chaos.
That's right.
We can do what we want. We'll call it 6-26. We'll call it 8-26.
Dude, it's the era of Trump. Everybody can do whatever.
We can do whatever we want.
Exactly.
But I thought it would be fun to do some questions. So why don't we, you can start us off.
Oh my God. Okay.
What's the first question you have for 2026?
Well, I do think the Dems are going to take back the House, right? So my first question involves the interregnum period in and around lame duck.
Sort of.
We're already at the end of the year. We're going to rewind to other parts of the year. But I think in terms of like sort of pressing issues, when the Democrats take back the House, I'm interested to know which White House official becomes the subject of the first House investigation. And I specifically am interested in whether it's Pete Hegseth for the boat murders, Kash Patel for the FBI purges and what he's done to the department, or maybe Pam Bondi for Epstein. I mean, there's a lot to choose from.
There is.
And I do think that there's going to be an enormous amount of interest in terms of how do House Democrats organize themselves. And I'd like to know how they sort of process the year and think about which villain to sort of investigate and haul before Congress first.
That's such a good question, and it raises a number of other questions in my mind,
yes,
which is, do the officials comply?
Yep.
Do they decide that it's Congress and—
Fuck Congress?
Yep. You can send your subpoenas and we can ignore them, and then what are you going to do? Get the Justice Department?
And what do Democrats do if that happens?
And what do Democrats do? Because isn't there some kind of a— congressional sergeant of someone can do something there.
Yes, I think, well, they can be held in contempt of Congress, right? And we know Steve Bannon. I mean, there's
at some point, though, it probably does have to go to the Justice Department.
Yes.
Which is Donald Trump's Justice Department.
Yes, it's true, which is ironic because we might be investigating Department of Justice officials and potentially the head of the Justice Department. I did look into like the strength of a preemptive presidential pardon, and as it intersects with a congressional investigation, it doesn't matter. They're separate branches of the government. You know, I think the question of accountability is going to be a big one if we lose any of Trump's murderer's row of idiots. That's such a weird combination of metaphors. Like if Pete Hegseth leaves or is fired, if Kash Patel leaves or is fired, if Pam Bondi leaves or is fired, do they get pardons on their way out the door? I would assume so. Like if there are departures this year, I think it'll be interesting to see what Trump's strategy is for this administration has absolutely committed crimes. And this could be a good test year to see what the end of the Trump administration might look like in terms of that.
So the other option, aside from them just saying, we're going to defy the subpoenas,
yeah,
is what they have been doing this year when they're before Congress, which is they just go and they treat it as a way to perform for Donald Trump,
yep,
and the Fox audience and right-wing audience beyond that, and just say whatever they want to say. The value to me in the subpoena power is less about
The testimony.
Who you get and the documents you get.
The documents.
And that I wonder about because there's a lot of documents,
yes,
that you can get from the administration.
That is the substance. That is the meat, as it were, John. And that stuff really matters. And that's not something they can prevent from coming out.
And then there's the question that they're going to have to wrestle with. And you're going to start hearing, because Democrats will run on affordability.
Mm-hmm.
And let's say we win.
Right.
Then it's going to be like, well, did you win the House and now all you're going to do is just investigations?
Totally.
And then there's the whole impeachment question.
Well, right. That was like a secondary concern, because that's obviously front of mind with regards to Trump. He's already talked about it in front of the House Republicans who gathered at the Trump Kennedy Center earlier this year. He's terrified of being impeached for a third time. And it's going to be, I mean, I do think that it is without question a better thing for the health of our democracy to have an opposition party in charge of one branch of government, and specifically the Democrats. And if they control at least the lower chamber, there's going to be, I think it'll be a shot in the arm for Democratic organization. And I think the movement right now has proven really robust at the grassroots level, right? The citizen engagement in our politics is undeniable, but you do need a tip of the spear that has investigatory power, subpoena power, and just is in government. So yeah. It will be helpful to have Democrats up there in control of the lower chamber, but there are going to be a lot of questions about how aggressively the party looks backward to this year and to the year before, and in terms of what Trump has done, and manages that question of accountability and whether that's something they want to tackle, which increasingly seems like an academic exercise, even though I don't think it is. I think it is essential to the work of democracy to hold people accountable who occupy positions of power, if not for this generation, then for the next.
Especially after this last year that we've had, and especially what we learned from the administration between the two Trump administrations. You know, as Merrick Garland in the Justice Department.
Well, right. I mean, right? We learned nothing.
Right. All right. Here's my first question.
Yeah, man.
How do most midterm voters feel about the economy this summer? Because to me, there's a lot of political science research around this, that impressions harden about 2 to 3 months before the election, maybe a little before that. There's always exceptions, of course, but that's usually when it happens. And I do think how voters feel about the economy is highly, highly correlated with how they feel about Donald Trump, and will be highly correlated to how they vote, whether they vote for Republicans or Democrats in the midterm, and particularly the voters who have not made up their minds.
Who are those voters? My God. But
well,
anyway, yes.
And they could make up their, not just should I vote for a Republican or should I vote for a Democrat, but should I vote at all? Should I even come out to vote?
Yeah.
And those people will make up their minds most likely on economic issues.
Well, we're going to be awash in Venezuelan oil this summer. So
yeah,
travel's going to be super cheap. And I, you know, bully for Trump. I think, you know, it'll be interesting. I kind of wonder whether that old thinking holds true for a year like this, just because the American public has been so both naturally interested in affordability because they're broke, and there's a sort of the economic pain has been so ongoing, right? Like January is a month of insurance premium hikes. And that's an affordability issue as much as it is a question about health insurance and ethics. And I feel like there's going to be a collective burden in terms of the economy that is with the American public in a way that maybe in other more economically healthy years there necessarily hasn't been. Mm. So you know what I mean? Like, I think the summer is going to matter, as it always does. We have attention span of a gnat.
Yeah.
But I do think it's like, you know, it's the question of economic health and the sense that Americans can not afford to live the lives they led even 2 years ago, I think is pronounced and it is emotionally resonant through the other months of the year in a way that it isn't necessarily in other years. So
yeah.
I'm not trying to refute your question.
No. But I wonder
how meaningful that traditional period of decision-making is given how bad things are going to be for the rest of the year. Wow, that was a really fucking long way of saying
one
sentence.
I've been thinking about this because here's the challenge is that, like, I don't know, for 80, 90% of the midterm electorate, election's probably already baked.
Yeah, totally.
Right? It's already decided. So the people we're talking about, and for Democrats to win the House, it's not going to take many seats, obviously, but to get, you know, the number of seats that would feel like blue wave territory, which is obviously going to
be
smaller
difficult.
Than it would be even in 18, just because there are fewer competitive seats because of gerrymandering. But that means that Democrats are going to have to win districts that Trump won, where a Republican is sitting in the House district right now and Democrats need to win, and Donald Trump won in 2024 and beat Kamala Harris by 5-6 points, right? Not just like one or two.
Yeah.
So then you have to find people who voted for Donald Trump in 2024 who were like, fuck this. Mm-hmm. This is not what I voted for. And again, we're like, what did you think you were voting for? But maybe they were like, I thought he was crazy.
Yeah,
I didn't like him. I think he's an asshole, but I thought he was going to manage the economy. So you need those people. And the question is, how many of those people do you get? And I think the another answer to that question depends on a couple things. The Supreme Court is going to decide.
That's my question number two.
I know. And also, we're recording this, everyone.
I know. It's going to be tomorrow.
It could be tomorrow. We're recording this Thursday afternoon, everyone. So
are we peeking
behind if you
the
hear
curtain?
Something, yeah. No, that's fine. We can just, people know what we're doing here. That's
they know
fine.
That we're not living for podcasting.
You might be listening to this, and then maybe after this conversation, maybe there's some kind of an extra extra interview.
Bonus.
So that's, I'm going to let you behind the curtain. If we get a tariff decision
it's
tomorrow,
huge.
We might do something extra on this.
Well, that was my second question, which folds directly into yours, which is what happens with the Supreme Court and Trump's tariffs. Because by every indication, first of all, Trump's already giving the money away. Right, he's already saying like we're going to cut checks to the American public from all this. How much did he say we have? $600 billion. He said, "Yeah, $600 billion. We have taken in and will soon be receiving more than $600 billion in tariffs." That's what he said this week. Just a word to the wise. I believe the official number is 1,000 companies have already preemptively sued the federal government to get their money back once the Supreme Court rules that the tariffs are not constitutional. That includes companies like Costco, Reebok, Dole, Xerox, Revlon, and Goodyear. You may have heard of them. They're not upstarts. Unfortunately, they're not in our ad roll this season. These are massive companies that have had to fork over lots of money if they haven't passed it on to the consumer and are like, give us our fucking money back. This was illegal. So, you know, it's one thing for Trump to be promising the money. It's one thing for Trump to think the tariffs are going to stay in place. It's another thing for him to be promising the money. And it's a third for him to actually give it away. Question is, like, if he does give it away, if he does cut checks, or if he does earmark it, like what happens if it needs to be returned? Does the Supreme Court let the tariffs that were already in place stand? I mean, there's so many questions. And also, what we hear from inside the White House is like, they're going to figure an end run around these tariffs no matter fucking what.
Yes.
Which is like, how do you do that?
And so SCOTUS decision, whatever it may be, big deal for sure. But some of the tariffs aren't subject to that decision, number one. Number two, he was just saying to the New York Times in that interview that he wants to try licensing fees.
Trump stakes.
Yeah, if that doesn't work. And of course, some of the tariffs have already been lifted. He's already backed off some of the tariffs. Yeah. So it's muddled there. I do think, and you alluded to this, he also told the New York Times that he does want to send $2,000 tariff checks.
Yes.
And he thinks he can do it without Congress.
Yeah.
And for timing, he said towards the end of the year.
Oh, so you could, I wonder when.
I know. So I am wondering if they're going to, like, in October just decide, we're going to send out fucking checks. Go ahead, sue us. And see if you be the people that say, we're going to take back $2,000 checks from the public. So I do.
Yeah.
I have a little concern about that. I'm just trying to think of what could change about the economy. Because I think right now, if the election was held right now, we would see some of the results we saw in 2025.
Absolutely.
And I keep wondering, like, how could the... What levers does the administration have to change the economy, and what exigent circumstances are out there that could change the economy?
Jerome Powell.
At least change how people, yes. So he's going to appoint a new Fed chair. So you could get a new Fed chair that, I don't know, feels pressured to lower rates, obviously, if it's Trump's Fed chair.
I think you don't even need to say, I don't know. I think expressly will be forced. Like literally, he'll have to wear a t-shirt to the interview that says, I will lower interest rates. Please give me the job.
And then the question is, there's another Supreme Court decision on whether the president can just fire Fed chairs for no reason or Federal Reserve members for no reason.
Yes.
And if Trump just gets the Fed chair, which he already is going to have, then the rest of the Fed can say, well, I don't care. Trump's crazy new Fed chair. I'm going to vote how I want to vote. But if he's now able to fire people and he puts a whole new Fed in, then we're in fucking uncharted territory.
Yes.
I don't know if that's actually going to improve the economy or destroy the economy, but that's a big one out there.
Well, I mean, what it does to independent agencies and the balance of power is fucking shocking. This was a subject of Runaway Country before we went left for break. We talked to the plaintiff. She is one of the lead plaintiffs in the cases going to the Supreme Court that will determine whether or not Trump can just fire people, you know, the independent heads of these agencies. And it has repercussions, of course, for the Fed and for the American economy. But it's for a fucking any agency that serves in an oversight capacity to make sure that the American public is not getting fucked over by the federal government and political appointees. And if the Supreme Court says, yeah, go for it, I mean, that basically guts any real oversight of this particular administration and any fucking administration. It's really, really, really bad. I mean, at the risk of becoming a watered-down, very, very poor imitation of strict scrutiny, like, what is happening at the Supreme Court in the course of the next 6 months is going to be hugely determinative, not just for this year, but for the immediate future of our democracy.
Yeah. I think that the ideal political scenario for the Trump White House, and this is not all necessarily things that they want, they just don't know what's good for them, but the ideal political scenario economically for the Trump White House is the Supreme Court strikes down the tariffs.
Yep.
The ACA subsidies deal goes through.
Yep.
They get some kind of compromise. The tax cuts, even though they are somewhat meager for lower and middle income people, are felt in the spring. And then maybe the job market, it's sort of
warms up,
hums, even if it doesn't get worse, right? Like maybe it just sort of putzes along.
Sure.
And then the AI boom, the AI bubble doesn't pop, doesn't crash.
I mean, that's like that. It doesn't seem that far-fetched.
That's right. That's what I'm saying. And then,
right?
Like, if people feel even a little bit better than they do now, then I would have some concern heading into
the
fall.
Yeah, but don't forget Trump's ability to royally fuck. I mean, he's on a streak right now, and we say this in the week of Venezuela and the ICE shooting of an unarmed American citizen in her Honda, where he doesn't give a shit, actually. I mean, he cares about not getting impeached, right? That's his main interest in the midterms. But he's in the sort of late-stage autocrat, he's running the late-stage autocrat ego playbook, where it's just about, like, big guns, being cruel, owning the libs, politics be damned. So even if, I mean, I don't know, you'd think that we've been here before and people voted him back into office. Even if the economy is like, okay, the fact that there could be National Guard troops, the fact that in a city near you, the fact that American citizens are getting assassinated by ICE agents in masks, the fact that there are immigration dragnets that are fucking up just communities and labor forces, you know, all of this contribute, and the fact that we may be invading Greenland, all of this contributes to a feel of chaos, lawlessness, and insanity that, I don't know, it'll be interesting to see how American, I mean, that stuff is, I think, tangible in a way that talking about, you know, fascism as a sort of academic thesis, as it was perhaps in the 2024 election.
Yes.
I think that stuff, because it's unfolding on videos and on streets and in cities all over the country, it resonates in a way and is therefore maybe more meaningful than, you know, the discussion about Trump's autocratic tendencies was in the Biden years.
Pod Save America is brought to you by ZipRecruiter. If you're hiring for your company, this is a busy time of year for you because you've got new 2026 goals, which means finding the right people to accomplish them. Unfortunately, you also have a new hiring challenge for 2026, like filling specialized roles or identifying qualified candidates from a huge pool of applicants. Thankfully, there's a place you can go that can help you conquer these challenges and achieve your hiring goals, ZipRecruiter. And right now, you can try it for free at ZipRecruiter.com/crooked. ZipRecruiter's matching technology works fast to find top talent, so you don't waste time or money. You can find out right away how many job seekers in your area are qualified for your role. With ZipRecruiter's advanced resume database, you can instantly unlock top candidates' contact info. No wonder ZipRecruiter is the number one rated hiring site based on G2. Let ZipRecruiter help you find the best people for all of your roles. 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. See for yourself. Just go to this exclusive web address right now to try ZipRecruiter for free, ZipRecruiter.com/crooked. Again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/crooked. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
Pod Save America is brought to you by Sundays. Out with the old, in with the new. It's that time of year, right? Question for you. How old is that giant bag of kibble you bought for your dog that you're still serving to them? Oof, I bet you don't even know, and that's a problem. The solution, Sundays. Sundays was founded by a veterinarian and mom, Dr. Tori Waxman, who got tired of seeing so-called premium dog food full of fillers and synthetics. So she designed Sundays, air-dry real food made in a human-grade kitchen using the same ingredients and care you'd use to cook for yourself and for your family. Every bite of Sundays is clean and made from 100% meat and superfoods with no kibble. That means no weird ingredients you can't pronounce and no fillers. Compared to kibble or other brands out there, Sundays invest 50 times more in its ingredients to ensure premium quality. Because your dog deserves food made with care, not in the interest of cost cutting. And the best part, you just scoop and serve. There's no freezer, no thawing, no prep, no mess. Just nutrient-rich, clean food that fuels their happiest, healthiest days so you get more of them to share together. Look, we all love our dogs like they are family. Mm-hmm. They might as well be sons or daughters or some other relative. Why wouldn't you give your pup the kind of food you would want to give to someone in your family, especially when you know it gives them more energy, puts them in a better mood, makes them more calm or focused, less itchy, no more eye boogers, better poops, all the good stuff. Take care of your dog. Show your dog some love. Make the switch to Sundays. Go right now to sundaysfordogs.com/crooked30 and get 30% off your first three orders. Or you can use code crooked30 at checkout.
What causes eye boogers? I don't even know.
I don't even know either. That's 30% off your first three orders at sundaysfordogs.com/crooked30. sundaysfordogs.com/crooked30 or use code crooked30 at checkout.
Well, that's a good segue to my next question.
Okay.
Which is, how far will Stephen Miller take his domestic war against people who don't look like him or believe what he believes?
Do you think I will be a resident of the United States of America by the end of the year? I certainly don't look the way he thinks Americans should look.
Did you catch the Atlantic profile on Stephen Miller?
I caught the first two paragraphs of it, John. Brutal.
Steve Bannon calls him the prime minister, which I think is the prime minister of the government, which I think is apt.
Yep.
There was an anecdote from 2024 debate prep. Mm-hmm. I've heard the Trump side of this before. I hadn't heard the Miller side of this one before. I don't know if it's new or not, but Miller was going back and forth with someone who was a little more moderate on immigration with him during debate prep. And Trump was frustrated and interrupted the two men and said, "Stephen, if you had it your way, everyone would look exactly like you," someone familiar with the exchange told The Atlantic. And then Miller responded, "That's correct," before turning back to continue sparring. So I do wonder, we have seen this week sort of the chaos of Miller's vision becoming realized of a mass deportation force rounding people up. And I wonder what the country looks like if they've come very close to defying the courts. In fact, you could say they have defied the courts here and there, but outright defiance of a Supreme Court, you've made your decision, John Roberts, now enforce it kind of thing. We haven't seen that yet.
Yeah.
Will we?
Yeah.
Birthright citizenship, speaking of Supreme Court decisions, is out there. Trump said to the New York Times this week that he confirmed that they're taking steps to strip Americans of citizenship. Denaturalization, he said Somali descent. But he said others, if they deserve it.
Yeah. Well, if you get it on his wrong side, fuck you. You have to get out of here.
Now, denaturalization is a difficult standard to meet legally.
Mm-hmm.
You have to basically have lied or committed fraud on your citizenship application process.
Right.
It's not just some of the Tom Emmer's
to Tish James about how much fraud you actually need to commit to be found in the fraud, the crosshairs of Trump.
But it's like I heard Tom Emmer a couple weeks ago be like, "Oh, all these Somali Americans who are caught in the fraud ring, like they should be denaturalized." Like, that's not what the law says, that like if you are a naturalized citizen and you commit a crime, then you can be denaturalized. That's not what it
but
if you lied somehow. They asked for I believe Stephen Miller and DHS have asked for like 100 to 2, like they asked for a certain minimum number of denaturalization cases every month.
That should send a chill down everybody's spine. And actually, my question 5 was how many migrants have been, killed, and how many American citizens deported by the end of the year, because those are that's the collateral damage of all of this. The problem with the Trump administration, it's like it is the frog boiling slowly. Remember when he was just going to get the criminals out? And now it's everybody's accepted that if you came here without papers, you're a criminal and therefore subject to deportation. Like, that was not the litmus test. Even like, I'm old enough to remember last year, or I should say like in 2024, when that wasn't going to be the criteria by which these dragnets were going to operate. You were going to have to be a violent criminal, not supposed to be here, and then they were going to take you out. Not that I agreed with that, but all of a sudden the standard is just, if you came here and you didn't have your papers, then we're going to tear you from your family, even if you are in court to try and follow the process. We are going to find you. We may take family members who are here legally and also deport them. I mean, and so when the Trump administration or when the law says you have to have committed some crime or fraud, like everything is fungible. Everything is movable. The goalposts are not stationary on any of this. And so while denaturalization may be legally complicated, it's a fool's errand to believe in the adverb legally with this administration, right? They change the game all the time. And if they decide they want to take naturalized citizens and rip their fucking passports and their papers away from them, then they will. And like, the courts be damned. I will also say this court has been a gross enabler of the worst, most racist impulses of this court, right? The Kavanaugh stops. You can now just stop someone on the street because they're brown. Like, that's a that's the world in which we live. And it is very difficult for me to imagine at the end of 2026, I almost forgot what year it is, that this is not a whiter country than it is as we sit here today in early January.
A whiter country, and I worry just more state-sponsored violence.
Totally.
And chaos on the streets. Because I do think there is a, and you know, this is the issue that I fear the most, is what keeps me up at night. But there is a temptation, I felt the temptation over the last couple of months before this week, where it's like, okay, the Chicago, the Midway Blitz wound down, the ICE
right.
Raids here in Los Angeles sort of, it went like city by city for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And then we saw that they lost on the National Guard in court. And so they announced they were taking the National Guard out of a lot of these cities. But they're still like, you know, then they sent them to Minneapolis. And now we're dealing with this in Minneapolis.
Yeah.
And now they're going to go to other cities. And what they want is a reaction.
Yep. They want absolutely provoke, want a
they
reaction.
They want to provoke a reaction.
Yep.
You hear J.D. Vance in an interview this week saying like, oh, well, we got to... J.D. Vance and Stephen Miller think they have done poorly on deportations.
Mm.
They think that they are getting heat. They're not listening to the people who are upset about this on the left or the center.
No, they're listening to the people
or the center right.
Yeah.
They're listening to the far, far right who's like, you have not deported enough people. You have not rounded up enough people. And there are too many people who still have citizenship who shouldn't have citizenship here. And J.D. Vance is like, well, once now we get the system in place and the money's coming from all the funding and the big, beautiful bill for ICE, now we're going to start going door to door. He said on Fox. And I think I worry a lot about this for this year because I there's no reason for the administration to stop doing it because they don't give a shit what the courts say. They don't give a shit about public opinion on it. Public opinion has turned hard against them on deportations.
Yeah.
They enjoy
the violence and the cruelty.
Yes.
Right. That's why you see when they kill an American citizen on videotape, the reaction is not even let's let the investigation play out. The reaction is let's smear her memory, let's degrade her humanity, and let's suggest that her death was warranted. I mean, whoa.
Yep.
Right? Like, that's where we're at. I will just say by the numbers, according to the DHS in mm-hmm. December of last year, in President Trump's first year back in office, more than 2.5 million illegal aliens, their term, not mine, have left the U.S., including an estimated 1.9 million self-deportations and 622,000 deportations. I would love
hard to trust those numbers.
Very hard to trust those numbers. But also, that's
especially
not...
Especially in the self-deportations. Exactly.
Is that people that like went to go see family and then just couldn't get back in the country? It's hard to know what that actually means. Also, 622,000 deportations is a fuck ton of deportations. How many of them were actually people who had papers to be
right.
here? But also, that's not the number that they wanted.
Yeah.
So, like, that should send a chill. They are very interested in meeting their targeted numbers, and they will stop at nothing to reach them. So the fact that 622,000 isn't even close to what they wanted should scare us all.
And the other shoe that hasn't really dropped yet is, if you remember after Charlie Kirk's assassination, there was the, like, we're going to go after Antifa and all the left-wing groups and really crack down on opposition.
Yeah.
And it was a lot of, like, sound and furor and not much came of it. And now this week we've seen, you know, it's like kicking back up again because after they have decided to kill an unarmed American citizen, you know, J.D. Vance at the White House briefing today was like, we're going to find the people who fund this. And, you know, I still don't know how much of it is bullshit to scare people or how much of it is like suddenly subpoenas are going out and, you know, people are getting sued and dragged to court. And that worries me too.
Well, yeah. And I didn't put this in as a question, but they are all doing everything in their power to, you know, consolidate the the media landscape and the information landscape to suit their own ends, right? Whether it's going after...
That was going to be my next question.
Okay, you go. You go. No, Take it away, boss. I didn't put it on. I didn't know
that was
on my
perfect.
List.
Look, so our segues are so natural now, so we don't even have to go, like, next question.
It's like we work at the same office.
It was like, what kind of impact will the Trump MAGA war on independent, objective media have? And that, you know, there's a couple dimensions to that, right? That now, again, to the boiling frog thing, like after a year, they, so TikTok is back, right? You know, the Chinese gave us TikTok and now there's some consortium, right?
Yeah, that, like, right.
So there's some Trump allies
yeah.
are in there. Elon's still got X.
Yeah, and Grok.
Right, and Grok. And the AI overlords have kissed Donald Trump's ass. Yep. So
you know what happens when you kiss ass, John. You just get ass.
You guys have to listen to, who don't know that reference, you have to listen to Runaway Country.
It's a deep cut.
Yeah, it's a deep cut. So they are, he's got them on the team. He's got the Ellisons, who now have CBS and are looking to also take Warner Brothers and CNN. Or maybe just CNN, who knows. And right-wing propaganda network, that's bigger than ever. And I guess my question is, like, it's happening. How much of an impact does it have this year? And that, you know, like, when does it start? When do you start, and maybe we'll never know, but, like, when do you start seeing it having an influence on public opinion?
You know? I mean, I think the CBS stuff is a great test case for that, right? Because that's the most insidious, right? There you have legacy brand. You have someone installed, Barry Weiss, who is clearly doing the, you know, handiwork of the Trump administration. And in the most, I suppose we can call it skillful, because Barry Weiss is smart. She's very articulate. Yeah. You know, she ran a very successful independent news organization, not as successful as the money they paid her for it. But, you know, she ain't Sean Spicer, right? And so in that way, it's much more malignant, I think. And Tony DeCoppel is not a malignant actor necessarily, but the language he's using, the stories he's covering, the favor he's currying with the administration is incredibly detrimental.
Marco Rubio, we salute you.
I know. I mean, right. I mean, I have to say,
this has surprised me. And like, you can call me naive. It wasn't necessarily as naive, but I'm just like, Barry Weiss, whatever. Like, first of all, is it really going to be that blatant? What's going to happen? The Tony DeCoppel stuff in this last week is like, are you fucking kidding me?
I know. It's
the Marco Rubio stuff is so, it's just, I don't think that's effective, first of all, but I also think it's just like so embarrassing.
It's so embarrassing. I think the great hope is that, and I say this as someone who worked at CBS and, you know, took pride in working at CBS for a while, that the evening news has become so utterly irrelevant that they can't actually change. It's more
sort
of kind of watching a car slowly crash.
Lack of intense concern was coming from. Not that I didn't think they would try, but I was like, who's really watching the evening news?
Well,
I
don't think it's bad that it gets poisoned on the way down, though. Do you know, like,
yeah.
that... I don't think it's bad to have news gathering organizations, you know, and the poisoning of it, the irrelevance of it, it's just all fucking bad for information health in our democracy. And that part is really distressing to me. You know, destroying CBS, even if it doesn't have an immediate and practical impact on the sort of citizenry, it's just not a good thing for democracy. And to get away with it is... You know, that's just another way of destroying the Fourth Estate, is to just make it so fucking unwatchable and so gross that it doesn't matter anymore. And that's a model for, you know, linear cable, which is increasingly irrelevant. Just like map that on to CNN, right? And then like destroy that shit and you're done. Like, it's what happened in Hungary. They chose to close these newsrooms, right? Which is more aggressive than what the Trump administration is doing. But by installing talentless hacks that nobody believes in a medium that's increasingly irrelevant, well, then you get rid of like institutional media in a pretty adept way.
Yeah, I mean, there's the question of, you know, the sort of right-wing media conglomerate propaganda network out there versus opinion that is more left-leaning, analysis that's more left-leaning, and we obviously think about that a lot here. But my big question is, how many people are out there paying for news gathering?
Totally.
how much news gathering is going on and how much of it will be able to continue that is not tainted by fear of Trump or just, opinionated to sort of match MAGA preferences.
Totally.
And, you know, we're sitting here in the week that I think the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette is closing down.
Shuttering because two psychopaths who own it are trying to own the libs that work for the paper, basically.
And I do wonder, like, just from a news gathering perspective, if we're going to be all takes and opinion and then AI slop and, creators who, God bless them, but like, are people getting, I worry about actual news gathering.
Where does that leave us?
And who's going to pay?
It's just me interviewing some people on Runaway Country. That's not news. That's just me interviewing people.
Pod Save America is brought to you by Helix. I love my Helix mattress. I have a Dawn Lux. It's the best. And in this colder season, you end up maybe you want to, get cozy and stay comfortable with your Helix mattress. And the Helix offers a variety of mattresses designed to fit your sleep needs. How will you know which Helix mattress works best for you and your body? Take the Helix sleep quiz. It matches you with the perfect mattress based on your personal preferences, making it easy to find a mattress that suits your sleep needs. Helix will deliver your mattress right to your door with free shipping in the U.S. The Happy with Helix guarantee offers a risk-free, customer-first experience designed to ensure you're completely satisfied with your new mattress. You can rest easy with seamless returns and exchanges. They even have a 120-night sleep trial and limited lifetime warranty. Go to helixsleep.com/crooked for 27% off site-wide. This offer is exclusive to Pod Save America listeners. That's helixsleep.com/crooked for 27% off site-wide. Make sure you enter our show name after checkout so they know we sent you. helixsleep.com/crooked.
Pod Save America is brought to you by ZBiotics. Let's face it, after a night with drinks, I do not bounce back the next day like I used to. I have to make a choice. I can either have a great night or a great next day. That is, until I found pre-alcohol. ZBiotics pre-alcohol probiotic drink is the world's first genetically engineered probiotic. It was invented by PhD scientists to tackle rough mornings after drinking. Here's how it works. When you drink, alcohol gets converted into a toxic byproduct in the gut. It's a buildup of this byproduct, not dehydration, that's to blame for rough days after drinking. Pre-alcohol produces an enzyme to break this byproduct down. Just remember to make pre-alcohol your first drink of the night. Drink responsibly, and you'll feel your best tomorrow. You guys know I'm an evangelist for ZBiotics. I've been using it for years. I basically won't have a drink without taking one before. I always notice a difference, especially if it's like the holiday season. You have that one extra drink that you normally wouldn't have, but you're out with friends. You're having a good time. You don't want to call it a night. ZBiotics is a life changer for me in those circumstances. Here's the thing. I know you might be skeptical. Try it once. What do you have to lose? Get one pack. Just try it one time. If you don't like it, whatever. But you're going to love it. Ready to try it? Go to ZBiotics.com/crooked. Go now. You'll get 15% off your first order when you use Crooked at checkout. Plus, it's backed by 100% money-back guarantee, so there's no risk. Subscriptions are also available for maximum consistency. Remember to head to ZBiotics.com/crooked and use the code Crooked at checkout for 15% off.
All right, speaking of the health of our democracy, I do wonder if we still have a representative democracy by the end of this year. I hate to go back to the Supreme Court, but I do think Louisiana versus Calais, where they're looking at Section 2 of the Voting Rights Act, which is like probably the end of the Voting Rights Act as we know it, something that Chief Justice John Roberts has wanted to make real since he was a staffer in Ed Meese's Department of Justice under Ronald Reagan. The conservatives have hated the Voting Rights Act for a long time. And now you have a bunch of white people basically suing and saying it's reverse racism to have districts that prioritize minority voices and voters and give them representation in Congress. That's where we're at. And I just think you do away with that and, well, first of all, the South is gone. And one of the most important sort of reparative mechanisms for our long and checkered institutional racism disappears. And at this moment, when we no longer have affirmative action, we have like an administration that says that any kind of civil rights gains are wokeism that need to be reversed, whether they happened in World War II or yesterday.
Yeah.
It's a dangerous time. It's a dangerous time for people of color. It's a dangerous time for people who believe in a more inclusive society. And I think the Supreme Court decision could have like profoundly, profoundly traumatic after effects on American society.
Yes, and I don't think it will go well. And I mean, from oral arguments, at least. And I do think the only optimistic part is that I think it's going to be tough for whatever decision they make to be implemented before these midterms.
Yes.
But that's cold comfort for, you know, generations to come.
Yeah.
I also think, and we've seen that this year with redistricting, that what's going to happen then is sort of a gerrymandering race to the bottom, where if we lose another 10, 15, whatever seats in the South because of this decision, then the blue states again are going to go back and be like, all right, well, we're going to just wipe out all the Republicans
right.
in our district. And then you're going to just have this country that is
completely split.
Yeah.
Bad. What could go wrong?
Yeah. All right. I have, will a challenger emerge who seriously threatens J.D. Vance's chance at the Republican nomination in 2028?
Oh, I love this question. It's so juicy. isn't it Viceroy Rubio that's going to be the challenger? Or is he the running mate?
I think he's the running mate. I think he's the running mate.
Wait, say more. Okay, who else do you think could be that person?
So I think one of the reasons that J.D. Vance is just the biggest asshole you've ever seen in public.
That's saying something. Right, that's like saying something.
Just really, I think his running theory is no enemies to your right, because that's where the challenge would come from.
Right, got it.
And he is not as charismatic as his boss, Donald Trump. He is not as charismatic as many of the figures on the right.
He can't order donuts, John. Right. He's like the least charismatic human being in America.
But like he needs to, you know, Tucker Carlson, Candace Owens,
ooh,
right? Like
ooh.
All of the, and I'm not even saying they're, who knows, maybe, but like, though he needs those people to like him,
yeah.
to not just like him, but to love him.
Yeah.
Or at the very least, not to challenge him or not to find challengers for him. And so you have a J.D. Vance who is, in some ways, his political fortunes are tethered to Donald Trump,
yeah.
as are Marco Rubio's. And so if, you know, Trump's popular or middling, then like maybe they're fine. But if Trump gets even worse, it gets even less popular, then J.D. Vance's ambitions are fucked and he can't break from Donald Trump.
Right.
And so he has to be as extreme as possible. And I think he happens to believe most of it, too. But even if he didn't, he would have to be
yeah.
if he wants to be president. And I think that someone on the right could say if the Trump administration, if Donald Trump's sitting at like in the 30s mm-hmm. by the end of the year, by the end of next year, there's going to be people on the right who are like, that's J.D. Vance that is saddled with that.
Yeah.
And
not me.
Not me. And he's a fucking PUD who is can't excite a crowd. Awkward.
He is no, I mean, here, say this about Trump. Many things can be said. He is incredibly authentic. And J.D. Vance does not have an authentic bone in his body. The other thing we're discounting is the sickness of Trump. He is going to enjoy the sort of Hunger Games of the yes. inheritance, like much like he does with his children, very Succession vibes.
Yep.
He will love playing Rubio and Vance off of each other. And I would guess if there is a challenger from the right, he will entertain that person at Mar-a-Lago just to make J.D. Vance and Marco Rubio beg and scrape that much harder. I mean, yeah. be sick and twisted.
We,
delicious.
Lovett and I did John Heilman's podcast right
Heard
before.
Of him.
I was going to say, you've done a show with him or
yeah,
two
yeah.
Right before the break. And he was down on Vance as a nominee, but was like, what about, he thinks like Don Jr. What do you think about Don Jr.?
I think it's interesting.
I think
right?
that's tough too.
I think they like making money. I mean, like, I really yeah, think they true. Like being rich. Right? I really think they like being rich. Although he seems a little drunk on power. I would not be surprised. It will be Sophie's choice for Donald Trump. Because
well,
I don't think he actually likes his children.
And
know?
I think that's a hard, I think it's a hard, I think the Vance Don Jr. thing is hard to like tease out. Because I don't think Trump Jr. goes after Vance. And yeah. I don't think Trump sort of allows that kind of thing. I really do think it, if there's a challenger to Vance, which I think is very possible, it is an outsider. It is a Tucker. It is a
TC?
Megan.
No. Now, let me tell you, no way. She likes that podcasting studio.
They all like she it, likes, but wouldn't you like a, you know?
She likes being Charlie of Charlie's Angels. She likes being the voice in the box.
Yeah.
I can't see that.
TC
from the barn to the barnstorm, I can see it. I can
oh,
see that.
Austin just held up a picture of Marjorie Taylor Greene.
MTG, flash in the pan. I feel like she's going to come back to me at the end of the year when she's a fucking nominee. I just feel like she can't get, like, she's done the thing. She's come out too early against Trump. I just think that that's just a very hard road to hoe. And I saw her yesterday on TV, not in real life. And I was just talking to her yesterday.
And she's yesterday. Like, I'm not into
Michelob Ultras at the local bar. And she's already, I feel like a discomfort there that is going to get even more pronounced the more real her bid becomes. But you know what? I should shut the fuck up because I also didn't think Donald Trump was necessarily going to win in 2015.
What do you got?
I got one that is just a complete fucking downer, but it's real relevant. Will medication abortion still be legal by the end of the year?
Oh, God.
Sorry, I know. We were talking MTG, but this is fucking so real because this is a week in which psychopath, bear killer, like creatine monster, yeah, Robert F. Kennedy Jr. has changed the sort of vaccine recommendations for children, getting rid of, what did he get rid of? Flu, RSV, rotavirus, hepatitis A, and meningitis. Who needs to be vaccinated against those things? He has done everything he said he wouldn't do in his Senate confirmation. And he never said he wouldn't get rid of mifepristone. And he under the head of the FDA, Marty Makary, they have, you know, they pledged to conduct a full review of mifepristone's safety. This is a gimme to the hard right. Kennedy has proven himself absolutely fucking shameless when pandering to the political right and has totally politicized the FDA and HHS and the CDC. And I could absolutely see a world in which they get rid of mifepristone, which is the drug used in most medication abortions, which account for, as of 2023, 63% of all abortions. We don't talk about abortion, and I think there are a lot of reasons for that, not least among them because it didn't win Democrats 2024, but that doesn't mean the issue isn't insanely urgent, and it is a matter of, like, national health concern, and it is just as urgent as vaccine schedules and mRNA research and everything else he's doing to fuck with American bodies over at his cabinet agency. So I'm curious to know whether that's something that, you know, people can choose by the end of the year.
You know, as you started that answer, I thought, okay, I could see it happening. If I were to bet, I would bet against it only because Donald Trump has seemed skittish in going too hard right on that issue for purely political reasons. And a bunch of Republicans in more competitive areas feel the same way for either real reasons or political reasons. But to our whatever question we asked a couple before this, on the gerrymandering race to the bottom, as the country gets more polarized and there are, and it's like, oh, well, there are a bunch of Republicans in blue states that we're worried about now? Certainly less. And you start to worry that, like, wouldn't the right, who have now outlawed abortion in most red states,
yes,
love to stick it to the blue states?
You can't get pregnant and have a miscarriage in a red state.
Right.
Right? Like, that's where we're at. So the idea that they would make it, if not it would be very difficult to access medication abortion seems very possible to me.
It would be a stupid fucking thing to do in a midterm year.
Yes.
I will say.
But could happen in, you know, December. 20,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
Or in early January.
Yeah. Okay. I bet Susie Wiles and Trump himself are like, hey, we want to win the midterms. Let's cool it.
Simmer down. Let's wait. Let's just make sure kids can die of polio and
measles
before
then.
Right, yeah,
that we're okay with.
Yeah, cool.
But who knows? Who knows?
Pod Save America is brought to you by Strawberry.me. You know that feeling when a new year starts and you tell yourself, okay, this is the year, work is going to be great. Mm-hmm. And then 2 weeks later, you're already burned out again.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we've been there. Are you there, Tommy?
I've been there.
I hope not right now.
No, I'm good right now.
If work left you drained last year, today's sponsor, Strawberry.me, can help you change that. Strawberry is career coaching that gets to the real source of your burnout, whether it's too much on your plate, no boundaries, a tough manager, or just feeling totally disconnected from the work you do. Or maybe I'm just a manager with high standards. A coach helps you figure out what's draining you, build habits that protect your energy, redesign your day-to-day so it feels sustainable, and create a plan so burnout doesn't come back by March. It's not therapy, but honestly, it's like therapy for your career. And here's the good part. You can get matched with a coach who fits your personality and goals in just a few minutes. Sessions are flexible, private, and made for real people with real jobs, not the fantasy version of you that always has it together. If you're listening and thinking, yep, I'm burned out, then this may be your new year reset. Go to strawberry.me/crooked and try your first coaching session for 50% off. That's strawberry.me/crooked.
The holidays are expensive. You're paying for gifts, travel, decorations, food, and before you know it, you've blown way past what you were planning to spend. Don't start the new year off with bad money vibes. Download Rocket Money to stay on top of your finances. The app pulls your income, expenses, and upcoming charges into one place so you can get the clearest picture of your money. It shows how much to set aside for bills and how much is safe to spend for the month so you can spend with confidence. No guesswork needed. Get alerts before bills hit, track budgets, and see every subscription you're paying for. Rocket Money also finds extra ways to save you money by canceling subscriptions you're not using and negotiating lower bills for you. On average, Rocket Money users can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Start the year off right by taking control of your finances. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Is Gavin Newsom still the front runner at this time next year?
Big question.
How was his podcast? You were just up there.
I was just up there. He gave me a full tour of the governor's mansion. For people who are art, people who like street art, there is a rotating series of art exhibits in the governor's mansion, including a collection of Barry McGee surfboards. If you know who Barry McGee, a.k.a. Twist, is, a former graffiti writer who now is part of the collection at LACMA, he's amazing. And I walked in and I was like, this is fucking awesome. And he was like, you know who Barry McGee is? And I was like, you know who Barry McGee is? And then I was like, you are never going to get elected president. Like, you cannot know who Barry McGee is and get elected president. That's too fucking street smart. Gavin Newsom is a delightful interviewer. I will say we had a great time.
He's really good at it.
He is very good, surprisingly good, because most people who are politicians are completely self-involved. And he, I think, surprisingly, like, deeply curious, and he's a chatter, you know? I think he has a lot of passion for the job. I think there's going to be just a massive question about the California of it all. Right?
It's the biggest one for me.
It's the biggest one. I have long thought that you need someone that is as memeable as Donald, or can drive the meme machine the way that Trump does, and it has the zero fucks, Yosemite Sam style arsenal. And he's that dude. He's establishing himself early as the by far the most joyful warrior in the pack. I just wonder if it is off-putting to the very earnest Democratic Party that looks at the stakes, and it's just like, it's hard to know. I mean, it's very hard for me to understand how he plays to a party that right now is largely oriented against Trump and has definitely not declared what it is for and how it wants to be for those things. Do you know?
Yes.
So I'm not answering your question.
No, but I mean,
I've
been thinking about this for a while because the more I watch Gavin Newsom, get to know Gavin Newsom, interview him, interviewing him, the more I like him.
Yeah.
And I really appreciate, like, what he has been doing mm-hmm. to fight not just in California, but nationally for the party. As we get closer to an actual Democratic primary, there's part of me that always thinks, like, oh, this is a California governor?
Yeah.
This California?
Yeah.
Is
so
like,
California.
And that it's not about him necessarily. It's just about like...
Although I did think, like, should I suggest he wear his hair differently? Like, if he wants a better
shot. That's something. That is something.
Cut it shorter?
But like, did you read the Atlantic profile on him?
I did. I started to. But I was literally going to meet the man, and I just had like a heavy dose of Gavin Newsom that day. And I much respect, Governor. I just was a lot of you.
It's just, there's a couple things. They talked about the California of it all. And they were like, you know, another reason for hesitation might be that California has other laws that must have the makers of Republican attack ads salivating with anticipation. In 2020, the state passed SB 132, allowing male criminals to self-identify into women's prisons. One of those transferred, Tremaine Carroll, is awaiting trial on charges of raping two female inmates. And it's like, okay.
There you go.
Again, this is just like...
This is when Kamala Harris.
I know. And again, when I first heard that story... I was like, well, that seems, and you like look it up and you're like, okay, well, there's a law and you get it. And you're like, okay, well, if you're going to provide everyone medical care and then you're going to say that transition care is medical care, you know, like one thing leads to another and it makes sense in context. But then when you see it, you're like, oh, okay, that's going to be a challenge.
Yeah.
And he's just very, like he's very California.
Yeah.
Like, he fits the bill of a California, you know. It was like they talked about his wedding to his current wife. And it was like, you know, the ceremony was conducted by Carol Simone, a modern day mystic whose website describes her as a medium and astrologer. Just like, it's just the most,
Donald,
California shit ever.
Right. And like, we elected a serial philanderer, and like, he has been married a trillion times and had affairs with porn stars. And yet we're like, don't you dare get married by a mystic.
Donald Trump is a good code switcher. Yeah, and that is. Like, he is, you know, Manhattan, but he's not Manhattan. He's outer borough, and he's rich, but he's sort of like, he's got a chip on his shoulder about being rich. So he's sort of, you know, so he's got that. Barack Obama had his feet in 10 different worlds.
Yes.
Like Bill Clinton, Oxford, Arkansas, right? Like Joe Biden, right? Like, the people who succeed in politics nationally can identify with the other part of the country, if not by resume and identity, then by just some experience in their life, some feel.
Yeah.
And maybe he has that.
We haven't seen this sort of talking tour yet. He is going to have a memoir come out in February.
Yeah.
He will be on tour for that, and it will be an interesting case study in his what is it, press the flesh skills.
Yeah. But who else? Who else do you think for the—
I had a conversation with a big Dem over the break, and she was saying J.B. Pritzker is who she liked.
Okay.
She thought he had been taking regular doses of Mounjaro in preparation for that.
Oof.
Her words, not mine.
Okay.
I think they're going to see some governors. Josh Shapiro is going to be up in the mix. Mm-hmm. Maybe Gretchen Whitmer raises her hand. I think Wes Moore is absolutely going to be on people's dance cards.
Yep.
I mean,
Gallego is out there.
Maybe. I mean, I think it's going to be a pretty big field. Hopefully not like so big as to be unwieldy. But listen.
No one's popping out for me ahead of the pack right now.
That's why it's just Gavin Newsom in his tote bags with Kid Rock and the laying of the hands. I think that is the greatest meme I've ever fucking
seen. It's really
funny. If you're listening to us, Gavin Newsom's social media team, please make that into a tote bag. People will buy it. All right. I got my – is this my sixth?
I don't even know which number I was on.
This is my sixth, but I can continue to ask questions.
It.
What will the White House actually look like? Okay. So here's the news. Here's the news, John, today. Actually, this is news of the week, but there's always news about the White House. The ballroom is going to be now as tall as the main mansion itself.
Oh, yes. Which means we also have to add on to the West Wing.
Did you see that? Exactly. So they're considering a one-story addition to the West Wing's colonnade in an effort to create symmetry with the two-story colonnade that would lead from the White House to the ballroom. And then there's going to be maybe an office suite for the First Lady, which would be nice since they destroyed any office she once had, and a reconstructed White House movie theater. Well, thank God they can screen more Sly Stallone films, in full 4K HD or whatever the fuck it is. Point is, he is completely rebuilding the White House.
Yeah.
It is not going to resemble itself whenever construction is complete. It's shocking.
It's going to look like another Trump Tower.
God.
And I would not be surprised if he just puts the fucking name
Trump in gold.
I mean, I made this joke to Dan on Thursday's Friday's
recycle
podcast.
Recycle it. It's okay.
Yeah, it's the... We did this for the 2011 Correspondents' Dinner. We had a big slide up, big picture of, oh God, if Donald Trump did run for president, this is what the White House would look like. And we should put
Cassandra.
It up on the screen.
You were Cassandra.
It looks very close.
You were in the predictions business.
He's
got to remember who lives there, right? Isn't that what they're saying is the reason that everything's labeled right now in the White House with this hideous gold lettering that really looks like the kind of lettering you'd see on a restroom door is because he's so addled and so forgetful and his brain isn't working right that he needs reminders about, like, this is the Oval Office, this is the Situation Room, and this is the White House where Trump lives. This is where you live, sir.
Yep.
But, it's no surprise that architects keep resigning from this project. It's so fucking controversial. And without being, like, the worst downer in America, it's also symbolic of the work it's going to take to rebuild our fucking country after this person is out of office, right? Like, he is fundamentally changing institutions. He's rebuilding our democracy. I don't want to say rebuilding because he's destroying the democracy, but he's rebuilding American society in a very—
In his image.
In his image. And it's going to take time, just like undoing his hideous renovation of the White House is going to take, I don't know, how long is that going to take? Who's going to do that? And who's going to do it with what money? You know, it's a metaphor for everything else he's doing. So I'm curious to see what it looks like in December.
Well, it made me think too, sort of my last, it's like a smaller question, but I started the episode by mentioning this, like, the 250th birthday for America. Mm-hmm. And I do wonder how much the birthday, the anniversary, is going to matter in 2026, because they are going to go all out for that.
Ham.
And I think that in an election year and in a year where people are starting to think about 2028, there is, and this happens in America when there are centennials, bicentennials, like, there is going to be a debate over the meaning of America, the meaning of what it is to celebrate America's 250th anniversary. Donald Trump is going to be in control of that, unfortunately. He's got the White House thing. They're going to do fireworks.
Military parade.
This is going to be a big thing.
Jingoism run amok.
It's going to be a big thing in the summer, and they're going to want to bait. You know, they're going to, you know, America hating libs, and they talk down. And so we're going to have a good response to that about why the America that we love.
Well, and also nobody owns the flag. Nobody owns the flag.
Yeah, nobody owned the White House either. But,
well, I know. I see how that went. You know, I wonder if there's a drug that will induce a Rip Van Winkle-like state for all of us, so we can just fucking wake up at the end of the year instead of living through all of it. Like, if this is the first week, stop this train. I want to get off.
I look forward to our end of the year Pod Save America episode, where you're going to have to come for that. And
yeah,
we can
dude.
Talk about you and I doing these
we
questions.
We need to run it back.
We're
and
have plenty of
MTG
clips.
Will be running
gonna,
the official nominee.
We're going to have so many clips to play.
Oh, fuck.
If we miss any good questions also and you're listening, let us know.
Please. I mean, we
what other
wait,
questions?
We definitely, definitely miss
there
a
was,
good
There
question.
Was one that I wanted to, not to freak everyone out, but I mean, maybe it won't. You'll know that the Republicans are legitimately worried about losing the Senate,
yeah.
not just the House,
yeah.
if we start getting retirement from announcement from our friends Sam Alito and or Clarence Thomas.
Oh fuck, they are definitely going to do that. They are definitely going to, let me just say, at the end of this term there will be two vacancies in the Supreme Court. No question. I think that's almost
Well, if they
question.
Lose the so but no, it's but, interesting because if they lose the Senate,
well, they
can't
but
do
they
it.
Can no, but if they announce their retirements in June, they can get confirmation started in September. And you know.
But it's a gauge a little bit of how confident
well,
they are that they'll keep
at,
the Senate.
I think
because they could do it in the lame duck even if they lose the Senate. But
they're
that's
gonna,
also imagine Sam Alito and or Thomas announcing their retirement in like November, and then they suddenly get an I guess they could yeah nominated
yeah I
by
think they're
going to
do it at the end of the term. The problem is, like, will the conservative zygote that is going to replace them be fully hatched by then? Because they're going to nominate someone in utero.
It's just going to be like an AI chatbot, like
it's
a right wing
yeah,
AI chatbot
no,
that's
be.
Been like trained
what?
On fucking
live
Alex
forever.
Jones.
Live forever.
That's it.
Live forever.
Anyway, on that
year.
Note,
happy
2026.
Oh, boy.
Alex, this was fun.
Was it?
Thanks.
For...
I had a good time.
I did. Thank you for having me, buddy.
Thanks, thanks everyone, for listening. We'll be back in your feed with a new episode of Pod Save America on Tuesday. If you want to listen to Pod Save America ad-free and get access to exclusive podcasts, go to Cricut.com/friends to subscribe on Supercast, Substack, YouTube, or Apple Podcasts. Also, please consider leaving us a review. That helps boost this episode and everything we do here at Cricut. Pod Save America is a Cricut Media production. Our producers are David Toledo, Emma Illick-Frank, and Saul Rubin. Our associate producer is Farah Safari. Austin Fisher is our senior producer. Reed Cherlin is our executive editor. Adrian Hill is our head of news and politics. The show is mixed and edited by Andrew Chadwick. Jordan Cantor is our sound engineer, with audio support from Kyle Seglin and Charlotte Landis. Matt DeGroat is our head of production. Naomi Sengel is our executive assistant. Thanks to our digital team, Elijah Cohn, Haley Jones, Ben Hefcoat, Mia Kelman, Kirill Pelaviv, David Tolles, and Ryan Young. Our production staff is proudly unionized with the Writers Guild of America East.